Going to take a short break. We'll be back with author Alan Castles and Pam Colleen to talk about prostate cancer. Have we badly overreacted? And what is the real impact of Movember and all those mustaches and all that awareness? It's a very controversial subject. We'll be back with it in just a moment. Right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
So when you look at the big studies of PSA testing, it finds that, you know, you'd have to screen thousands of men in order to save, you know, an additional life.
The advice is straightforward. Healthy men shouldn't get routine blood tests for prostate cancer because PSA screenings do more harm than good. A panel called the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force is recommending this despite protests from urologists. This isn't a mandate. The panel says men over 50 who want a PSA test still can get one, but only after the doctor explains the potential downside. The group says too many patients suffer from impotence, incontinence, and other problems from the treatment of a tiny tumor that never would have killed them. John Belmont, Washington.
Yes, and I've talked to men who've had a serious intervention after having been tested for prostate cancer. So by serious, I mean they've had their prostates removed, and they look back in hindsight and say they wish they had never done it.
Why?
Because they're impotent. Because they can't have sex with their wives. Because they can't enjoy their sexuality.
Wow. Pam Colleen's been saying it all along. Author Alan Castle's been saying it all along. And now this week, this explosive report about prostate cancer. Have we done so much more damage than we ever imagined with this paranoia about prostate cancer? You got to get to a doctor. You've got to be screened for prostate cancer. If you're over 17, you need to have your prostate checked. Have we gone overboard? Pam Colleen joins me this morning. Good morning, Pam.
Good morning, Andy.
Wow. When I heard that report this week, I thought, oh, my goodness. Yeah, for all those people, and you know that you have a few people out there, when you come on, the hair on their neck goes up and go, what's she warning us about now? And it must be absolutely gratifying when it's something that you've warned us about, and which in this particular topic, Alan Castles has warned us about.
That's right. Alan has been warning us about the over-medication of society, the over-treatment or over-screening of society for many, many years now. He's a drug policy researcher from the University of Victoria. His first book came out several years ago now. That was called Selling Sickness. Now his new book is out. It's a brand new book. It's called Seeking Sickness. And we discussed several issues that are in the book with him back in November when we had him on the air last.
Now this new book is just coming out.
Hot off the press, Seeking Sickness.
In fact, it's coming out just this week, isn't it?
Yes, tomorrow's the official launch date.
Seeking Sickness. Listen to this title, folks. Seeking Sickness. Medical Screening and the Misguided Hunt for Disease. Author Alan Castle joins us this morning. Alan, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good, Alan. I tell you, we had you on 6 months ago. It was during the whole Movember thing when everybody around here was growing a mustache. I didn't because I can't grow a mustache. But it was all about prostate cancer and how you need to be checked and you need to be checked and you need to do it right now and you need to do it before the day is over or you'll die. Alan, you were warning us at that time about our overreaction to this issue. Why are we so crazy about being screened for prostate cancer?
Well, you know, it's something that obviously affects a lot of people. Like, prostate cancer does actually have a fairly high mortality rate. So the question is, can we do something early enough to prevent men from dying from prostate cancer? And you know, that's why you've got the Movember campaigns and the other sort of men's health groups really jumping onto the bandwagon saying, get out there and get screened. What they're not telling you, though, is that you have to screen an awful lot of people in order to save an additional life. And that screening is going to cause all kinds of problems. You know, even as simple things such as a biopsy of the prostate, you know, there's a very good research study that came out a couple of years ago. It was actually studied in Ontario, as a matter of fact, and it found about 4% of men that undergo a biopsy for the prostate will get a serious infection that requires hospitalization. Some of those people will die from that infection. So that's just one of the downsides of being told that you have something that needs further investigation.
Alan, what you're saying is so explosive. Let me, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but what if there was no awareness of prostate cancer and nobody went to be screened, what would be the difference between that scenario and the one that we're working right now with, that where we're all in a state of paranoia about right. this disease? What would the difference in the result, the end result, be in terms of its impact on men's health?
Well, you can only look at the research that says that, and this is confirmed by this report that you mentioned, the United States Preventive Services Task Force, a big organization in the U.S. that does independent analysis of screening, has essentially said that we should not be doing PSA screening at all. And, you know, that was, a real game changer, because we're sort of so accustomed to this. But to the question of, you know, what would happen if we had no screening? Well, you wouldn't have a lot of men unnecessarily diagnosed with something that will probably not go on to hurt them. Now, I should say that there is a type of prostate cancer that's very rapidly, you know, growing and can be fatal. Though the majority of us, you know, men, you know, in their middle age, are going to have some evidence of prostate cancer cells, and you know, that's not going to hurt us. And so, you know, I think if you had no PSA screening programs, you wouldn't be really overdiagnosing this disease in men and causing a lot of men to get unnecessary surgery, and some of those people would die from the surgery itself. And of course, the side effects being impotence and incontinence and so on. You know, I agree this is very controversial, and everyone knows someone who's had prostate cancer, who have died from prostate cancer, so clearly it's on our radar as something we want to prevent. Though, you know, it was really confirmed this week that the PSA test is not the way to prevent it.
But can't the prostate be enlarged for several reasons?
By all means, and in fact, you know, they recommend if men are going to get a PSA test that they, you know, not have sex something like 3 or 4 days before the test. You know, a simple infection can raise your PSA levels and other things as well. So, you know, there is a good possibility that you could get a PSA test and it could come out with a high reading, but it's not caused by prostate cancer at all, but caused by something else.
I had a discussion in the hallways of this radio station with a colleague this morning who has just gone through treatment for prostate cancer, and he gave me a question that he wanted me to ask you, because he even accepts the notion that there are a lot of false alarms.
Mm-hmm.
But he said, Andy, my PSA count wasn't up at all. It was only through a physical examination that medical staff said to me, you've got prostate cancer. And he believes it saved his life. So the question is, when they find evidence of a higher PSA count or through a physical examination that you have prostate cancer, is there any ability to tell you whether it's the less threatening kind or whether it's one that's going to destroy you?
No, there isn't. In fact, that's the probably the major problem with the PSA test is that it can indicate that there is possibly a presence of prostate cancer cells, but it can't tell you whether that's going to be the type that's going to go on and get you or not. And really, that's you know, wouldn't it be great if we had such a test that could actually indicate, you know, separate the wheat from the chaff, so to speak? And the problem with the test right now is that it seems like it's all chaff.
Mm-hmm. Andy touched on this question earlier, and I'm not sure if it was with reference to the PSA testing. You mentioned this, I think, last November, where there's a study in Europe that shows where they have the same outcomes in terms of death from prostate cancer as we do here, where we do the screening and they don't.
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, in British Columbia, where I live, the provincial government won't pay for a prostate screening. They won't pay for the PSA test in healthy, symptomless men.
Alan, there's a lot of men listening right now are going, Alan, tell us, what are you saying? We shouldn't be screened for prostate cancer?
I'm not a doctor, so I'm not going to give medical advice. But what the advice I would give is that if you are worried about your prostate, read a book. Read some good independent literature that looks at this situation, and then go to your doctor and have the conversation. You know, I don't think people should be either avoiding it altogether or jumping on the bandwagon. They should do any type of screening, whether it's your prostate or anything else, you do screening with your eyes wide open.
In your book, Seeking Sickness, you mentioned another book that you would recommend. It's called The Invasion of the Prostate Snatchers.
Yeah, isn't that a great name?
Oh, my goodness.
The Invasion of the Prostate Snatchers was written by a California medical oncologist, and this guy's looked at the sort of craziness in the U.S. where, in his opinion, huge amounts of over-screening and giving way too much surgery. And what he thinks is one of the problems is that a lot of the hospitals are buying these high-tech surgical robots and are marketing the robot as being, the cleanest, best, highest-tech way to get your prostate removed. And he says, this is just really a bit of a sham because, people get sort of, totally on board with the idea of having this high-tech procedure, but really it's just a moneymaker for the hospitals. And, he says that the amount of money in over-treating men for prostate cancer is really, truly astonishing. Something like a radiation therapist would get $60,000 to radiate one prostate.
$60,000?
Yeah, $60,000. So you see there's a huge incentive to find prostate cancer and then to treat it because there's so much money to be made.
Let me bounce that ball back to you. You're saying that money is what is driving this paranoia about prostate cancer and men's lives are being destroyed. Their sex lives are being totally obliterated. They're left incontinent. Their self-esteem is destroyed because Big Pharma is fueling this paranoia about prostate cancer.
Yeah, it's not just Big Pharma, though. And certainly the professions such as radiology or urology are very, very heavily invested in prostate cancer. So, it's partly driven by the professions, not necessarily by the pharmaceutical industry, and plus from the medical device makers, like the people that make the robots, the people that develop PSA tests and so on. There's an awful lot of money to be made in taking healthy men and then turning them into prostate cancer patients.
So what are you saying to men who are saying to their what should they be saying to their doctor? Doctor, before you go after my crotch, finish the sentence.
Yeah, what you're saying is, doctor, look, I'm concerned about this. Let's have a frank conversation about the pros and cons. And really, this is not an emergency thing. It's not like, you need to go to the emergency department to get a PSA test. This is something that you can take your time, you can do your research, you can actually have a reasonably informed conversation with your doctor.
Okay, we have to break for a news update, Alan. Your book is called Seeking Sickness, Medical Screening for the Misguided Hunt for Disease. It comes out when?
It comes out this week.
Comes out this week, and yet here it is. I'm holding it in my hot little hand. No wonder it's smoking. It's it is just off the presses. Folks, we'll be back with author Alan Castles, the author of Seeking Sickness. There's a title. When we come back, and we are going to open up the phone lines because this is a huge concern. It seems most men I know either have had prostate cancer or have a close buddy who has. It is out there. I shouldn't say that they have necessarily had prostate cancer. They've been warned that their PSA count is up and they've had the surgery. We'll be back in just a moment right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
So when you look at the big studies of PSA testing, it finds that, you'd have to screen thousands of men in order to save, an additional life.
We're talking about prostate cancer with author Alan Castles. His book comes out tomorrow. I have it in my hand. Seeking Sickness, Medical Screening, and the Misguided Hunt for Disease. We had Alan on about 6 months ago, and he was suggesting at that time that we have a paranoia about prostate cancer, which is driving us to be screened, and so many men's lives are being destroyed because they're so paranoid about prostate cancer that they're submitting to the surgery. They're having their prostate removed when they don't need to have it done, and it is destroys their sex life. It destroys, in many cases, their self-esteem, leaves them incontinent, sometimes destroys their marriage. There is huge carnage. And I know that maybe some of you said, yeah, right, when Alan Castles was on. And when Pam Colleen said it, you said, yeah, right. Well, what's so sweet on this program is when we can hand you from the traditional media, like ABC News, a report saying, you know what? Pam Colleen was dead on. You know what? Alan Castles was dead on. I want to share with you the report that ran on ABC News a couple of nights ago on this very subject.
In Healthy Living, an earthquake today about testing for prostate cancer. A panel of physicians and scientists told doctors to stop using the most common test, the PSA, a blood test. About 20 million men take it, and though the test does provide a warning about the possible presence of cancer, the panel said that information is doing more harm than good. Why? Here's ABC's Dr. Richard Besser.
Okay. It's one of the most common tests for men, a simple blood test to see if they have prostate cancer. Why would anyone be against that? Consider Paul Nelson. He's 51. When his PSA came back high, he had his prostate removed right away.
Panic was the number one thing in my mind.
Panic.
And the doctors are like, well, the only way to get it, make sure you're done, is to get it out.
But in cases like Paul's, the side effects of surgery may actually be worse than the disease. Most prostate cancers are slow growing and won't kill you. But more than 90% of men choose treatment anyway. As a result, as many as 50% become impotent. 26% can't control their bladders.
I actually think impotence and incontinence are some of the minor side effects. Some of them are actually going to have significant problems like pulmonary emboli, heart attacks.
Now, Paul Nelson is trying to warn others of how damaging the side effects can be.
No one was telling you anything.
Nobody. The doctors wouldn't talk about it. There was nothing on the internet.
Today's message? The PSA is a test that has overpromised and been overused.
If we truly appreciate the problem of men's health, we're going to work hard to find a screening test that actually works before we make it widely available to the population again.
You know, these guidelines are already controversial. There was a critique published along with the guidelines, a group of primarily urologists. They said the task force underestimated the benefits of the test and overestimated the harms of prostate cancer screening.
Oh, this is another one of those curves, another debate in the medical community.
Right.
What are people supposed to do?
Well, you know, I think the task force got it right. This is not a test for everybody. And Dr. Brawley's right that we need a better test. But for now, if you have someone in your family that you lost to fatal prostate cancer, or you have symptoms like trouble urinating, this might be the test for you. So we don't want to totally throw it away, but it's not something everyone should just go out and automatically get.
But really reflect on it before you go on to those treatments.
Exactly.
Wow. Pam, to hear it from Diane Sawyer, to hear it from Dr. Richard Besser on ABC News, exactly what Alan and you were saying 6 months ago.
That's right. I think that slowly this information is going to trickle out in the mainstream media, but, you know, they use fear to make people buy things and buy into things, and fear is a very, very powerful marketing tool.
Wow. Let's go to the phones. Reg, you have a comment.
Yes, good morning, Andy. Welcome back to the airwaves.
Thank you.
I'm facing that dilemma right now, and a year and a half ago, my count doubled. So I went to a urologist, and my count went down.
Reg, I'm going to ask you to talk directly to Alan. Say hello to Alan. Tell your story to Alan, if you would.
Good morning, sir. Good to talk to you. A year and a half ago, my count doubled. I went to a urologist. He said my count had gone down. I'd had another PSA test. The count went down. He said, well, let's wait another year. So now I'm scheduled to go back next month, and we're being flooded with all this information. I don't know what the heck to believe anymore.
Alan,
yeah,
do you have any comments?
I could understand that. That would be quite a dilemma. You know, the thing that you want to ask your doctor when you go and get another PSA test is ask him, is there other things that could be causing my PSA to fluctuate the way it has been? You know, there is some good research out there that shows that many things cause changes in PSA levels. And, you know, you really don't want to be sort of subject to any invasive stuff unless they're absolutely sure. And, of course, with the PSA test, we're never really sure.
And that's exactly why OHIP won't cover it, because it's not a proven test.
Yeah.
Reg, have there been moments when, especially if you've heard what Alan's been saying, that you've been tempted to say, you know what, I'm just going to ignore it. It's not going to hurt me. Alan's been saying that in so many cases, as we heard from Dr. Richard Besser in that ABC report, the side effects were worse than the disease.
You see, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
And also, the way I'm feeling right now, I'm really thinking seriously about canceling it, because I don't know. I don't know what to do. I guess I think the best thing, just take my chances, because if if the cure is worse than the disease, and I'm sorry, I've had enough surgeries. I don't want to go through any more.
Alan, I don't want to have Reg go away thinking that we have said, just ignore it. Advice would you give him?
You know, you've got time to do your research. You've got time to look into it more closely. You know, draw up a list of questions.
But how valid is this research? That is my question. We're being flooded with all this information.
Right.
So who do you believe?
So who I believe provides the best sources of information are independent sources. So people that aren't making their living by treating or testing for prostate cancer. So the report that Andy was talking about that came out this week, the United States Preventive Services Task Force, has a very large report about the analysis of screening studies. You should look at that report. You can find it easily. You can Google and find that report. Take a look at that. You might even want to print it out and bring it to your doctor to discuss it.
Okay. Thanks very much. I sure appreciate that.
Reg, thank you so much. Alan, I want to ask you this question.
Yeah.
And I'm crossing my fingers on this one.
Okay.
And so is every woman who is listening to the show.
Right.
If you're saying this about the screening for prostate cancer, please tell us that all of this applies only to screening for prostate cancer and not for mammography screening and not for colon and cervix screening and not for mental health screening and not for a number of other...
So, Andy, you can uncross your fingers. These principles apply to any form of screening where... The possibilities of overdiagnosis, of finding things that aren't going to hurt you, exist, whether it's mental health screening, osteoporosis, mammography. You know, thankfully, both mammography and PSA testing are the two most studied forms of screening that we've got. So there have been, you know, major trials, analyses of, say, mammography screening in Canada, in the U.S., and in Europe. And those trials, again, find that to save a woman's life, you would have to screen something like 2,100 women every year for 10 years to save one life.
Hang on. That is so explosive. I'm going to ask you to repeat that because there are women right now who are practically driving off the road or falling off their chairs. Can you give us those numbers again for women worried about breast cancer?
Yeah, so you'd have to screen 2,100 women every year for 10 years in order to prevent one death from breast cancer.
You're saying you'd have to screen 20,000 women to save one life?
2,000. Yeah.
But even so, 2,000 women.
Right. And so some people might say, well, you know, it's a lottery, and I'm willing to take those odds. The other part of the equation you need to know is that when they do mammography, they often find things, again, you know, calcifications and other things in breast tissue that look like cancer but aren't cancer. And so that starts the cascade of biopsies, sometimes surgery, drugs, etc. And, you know, so for the 2,100 women that you're screening, you will cause probably 60 or 70 of those women to have unnecessary biopsies and treatments because of the screening.
Okay, I'm going to ask you one more time.
Yeah.
To go through those numbers, and I'm going to write them down because they're so hard to believe.
So, you know, I'm doing this by memory. I hope I'm right. the 2,100, that's a fairly solid. If you look at, you know, information from the United States Preventive Services Task Force or the Canadian equivalent, the Canadian Task Force on Preventive Health Care.
But how many women would you have to screen over what period of time to save one life?
2,100 women over... screened every year for 10 years.
Okay, that's my 20,000, right?
Well,
2,100 over a period of 10 years, every year, or is that over the period of the 10 years?
That's every year, annual screening.
Okay, so over 10 years, that would be 20,000 people, 20,000 women. Wow, that's absolutely shocking. So what are you saying to women about being screened for breast cancer?
So again, this is what I say in the book is that, you know, mammography has been widely oversold. We have been wearing pink ribbons for years, telling women, you know, don't be an idiot, go get your mammogram, pushing it on younger and younger women where the benefits are clearly not there. So these would be women in their 30s or 40s. And at the same time, you're causing a lot of people to have unnecessary follow-up.
Let me ask Pam. We have to take a short break, but let me just ask Pam to translate what you're saying. Pam, what is... I mean, we're talking about sacred territory. People have certain beliefs about pink washing and about Movember.
Yeah. Right. Well, remember, Andy, we had Dr. Samantha King on the show, and she wrote the book Pink Ribbons Incorporated and the documentary that just came out last year called Pink Ribbons, Inc. And she came on the show, and she basically validated what Alan is talking about how all this hype around the pink ribbon and so on is really just a money-making venture.
Yeah. And you know, the good soundbite there is you should think before you pink.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And speaking of women, in your book, you also talk about bone screening, and I want to just read here some devastating side effects that you talk about with regards to Fosamax, and it's been on the market for more than 15 years, and even more serious adverse effects are starting to come to light, including abnormal...
Let me jump in. Fosamax, for people who are not familiar, what is it and what's it for?
It's for osteoporosis.
Okay.
And so the adverse effects are starting to come to light, including abnormal heart rhythm, severe bone, joint, and muscle pain, bone loss in the jaw. It has also been linked to inflammatory eye disease as well as cancer of the esophagus.
Pam, don't mm-hmm. fail to mention that it also, in long-term use, increases risk of fractures. So this is the cruel irony of that drug is that you take a drug to alter your bone density, hopefully to make your bones stronger, but you take it in the longer term, say 5 years or more, it actually makes your bones more brittle and more subject to potential fractures.
Are women being told this, though, Alan?
You know, there are warnings issued both by Health Canada and the US FDA on that very topic.
In fact, Alan, I saw that report on ABC News probably about a month ago that, taking this drug over a period of more than 4 or 5 years, you're going to end up with very brittle bones. And in fact, I remember the picture. They were just showing how your fibula could suddenly just explode and break.
Yes, absolutely. And there are dentists who routinely ask women if they've been taking this drug or a drug in that class. They're called bisphosphonate drugs. And we'll say, I won't do dental surgery on you because of the risk of your jaw falling apart.
Mm.
Well, we have to take a short break. And I'm glad because I got to pull myself together to focus for this final segment, because what you're saying is just leaving, Alan, people in such turmoil, like Reg, who called and said, Alan, what do I do? I don't want to die of cancer, but I don't want to have this procedure if it's going to destroy my life anyway. When you say the side effects are worse than the disease, what a dilemma to be in. We'll be back with our final segment with the author, Alan Castles, author of the book Seeking Sickness, when we come back in just a moment right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK. Well, Pam Killeen, you can just imagine the reaction of our listeners to hearing this explosive stuff from author Alan Castles. George, your thoughts?
Yeah, I've never called into a show like this before, but I'm just a little concerned what I'm hearing there this morning, and I'm a 12-year cancer survivor of prostate cancer, and I had no signs of any kind that I had a problem. And the only check I had, and at the time, back when it first started, I used to pay to have my PSA check. So the PSA number was going up gradually, and it never got really high for sure. And I got concerned, so I said to my urologist, so what are we going to do about this? And he said the only way to make sure was to have a biopsy done. And I said, well, if that's what we got to do, let's do it. So I had the biopsy done, and they did 12 biopsies, and sure enough, the cancer was there and quite a bit. One of the other things you need to, from my experience, consider is not only the PSA count number, but there's a chart and there's another score that goes with it, and it's called the Gleason score. And when you get those two on the chart, it'll give you an indication how severe the cancer you have is.
George, I have to jump in because we're almost out of time. Just your reaction to what you're hearing from Alan.
I guess in short, I would just say I think it's very important you just check with your urologist and get his recommendations. And I can't thank Dr. Chin enough. I've been around for 12 years, and if it hadn't been for him, I wouldn't be here.
Sure, George, I appreciate the call. Your reaction, Pam.
Oh, I would just like to hear Alan's reaction on that, actually.
Go ahead, Alan. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm glad you've come through it successfully, but his last statement, if it wasn't for his procedure, he wouldn't be here. You know, that's partly wishful thinking in the sense of, you know, people that have been through any kind of screening where they found something and they attribute their health to that test, to the procedure. A lot of times, that's wishful thinking.
Well, and you can understand that if someone has had the surgery on the advice of their doctor, and now their sex life has been destroyed, and they're incontinent, and they've had all this grief, they don't want to suddenly think to themselves, you know what, maybe I didn't need it. Alan, we are almost out of time. I wonder if you can just wrap this up and put a little bow on it. What you want our listeners to have as a takeaway from your visit this morning?
Sure. You know, in the book, I look at various examples of screening, you know, mental health screening, osteoporosis, various types of cancer screening. The main thing that people need to take away is that this is not an emergency procedure. You have time to take the time to do some research, to ask the questions about what could go wrong. And if you're being offered a screening test, don't jump into it and say, yes, let's go, whatever you say, doctor. Stand back, you know, do your research, and make sure that you have all your questions answered, including what could go wrong and what is the likelihood of having a benefit versus what's the likelihood of being harmed by the screening.
In fact, in your book, you have a list of about 5 or 6 questions that you need to be armed with, correct?
That's right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Terrific. Alan, people need more information. You've certainly piqued their interest. Where can they get more information about what you've been sharing with us?
Well, you know, they could read my book. the United States Preventive Services Task Force, if you just Google USPSTF, they have all of the major screening recommendations analyzed by independent experts. That's a very trustworthy source.
Can you give us that one more time?
USPSTF.
And that stands for?
United States Preventative Services Task Force.
Terrific. And your book comes out tomorrow, Seeking Sickness, Medical Screening, and the Misguided Hunt for Disease. Alan, thank you.
What is your website, by the way, Alan?
Oh, it's just my name, alancassels.com.
Okay, and Cassels is spelled C-A-S-S-E-L-S. Alan is spelled A-L-A-N. Alan, thank you so much.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Thank you, Alan. Yeah, that was a great show. He's done amazing research. I think people need to take this very seriously.
Well, our caller certainly illustrated to us what quandary it puts them in on so many of these issues. You know, you've got your traditional thinking, and then you got someone like this who says, wait a minute, we have overreacted. And then to hear Diane Sawyer and Dr. Richard Besser on ABC News saying, you know what, Pam Colleen was right. Mm-hmm. You know what, Alan Cassels.
No, we need more researchers like Alan. We need people who have critical thinking skills so that we can go out and question a lot of these big money-making schemes, essentially.
Wow. Another great show. Pam Colleen, thank you so much. 11 o'clock news coming up.